Wow, that's kind of tough to follow, but I'll try. So where do we go from there, and where do we go from Easter? That's the question we've been asking for the last few weeks. And I wanted to close this series today by telling you one disciple's story, because this disciple had an encounter with Jesus after Easter, like several of the other disciples that we've been looking at the last few weeks. But his story begins way before Easter, because he had a long journey of faith. And it's the story of a guy named Simon Peter. How many are familiar with Simon Peter? So Simon Peter is a fisherman. And one day, we don't know how old he is. He's 25 years old, maybe 30 years old, we're not sure. But he's standing by the Sea of Galilee, and he's from the Sea of Galilee. He's probably looked a lot like this. He was a fisherman by trade. In fact, we don't know a ton about Simon Peter, but we do know that he had a wife. We know that he had a big family. We don't know if he had kids for certain, but probably had some kids. We know he had a brother named Andrew. We know his wife's parents, his in-laws, lived with him in his house, as well as his brother Andrew. And if Andrew was married, probably Andrew's parents would have lived with them as well. So Peter was the guy who fished and sort of took charge of the family. He was the guy who was the leader of the family. He made enough money when he fished. He brought home enough to take care of the family. And he was responsible for that. And based on a lot of stories that we've read about Peter, we know he was a take-charge kind of guy. Like he was a born leader. He knew how to make good decisions. He knew how to make quick decisions. He knew how to get things done. He was a guy who had solid and firm convictions when he believed in something that was true. And maybe based on all of that, that's why one day standing at the lake, the Sea of Galilee, Jesus approached Peter and his friends. And Jesus was teaching the people, and he actually asked Peter if he could borrow his boat, and he said, sure. And so he got up in Peter's boat. And then Jesus actually went fishing with Peter. And Jesus said, hey, why don't you put the nets down on this side of the boat? And Peter and his buddy said, sure, we'll give it a try. And something miraculous happened that day. They pulled up more fish than they had ever caught before in their lives. And so Jesus then looked at Peter immediately after that, and he said, Peter, I've got an invitation for you. I want you to follow me. And if you begin following me, it's going to change your life. And it's going to change your life so dramatically that you won't be fishing for fish anymore. You won't be just taking care of yourself and your family and meeting your own needs. It's going to change your life in such a way that I'm going to have you actually fishing for people from now on. You're going to be living for something so much bigger than you're living for right now. And the Bible says that Peter decided to follow Jesus that day. Now, sometimes we read this story and we might get the impression that Peter just dropped everything and he left everything and he just sold out, you know, went out and followed Jesus with all his heart and all his life and did everything like that, and yet I don't know if that's actually true. Because as you read Peter's story, it's almost like when he first started following Jesus, he was probably following Jesus more for what Peter was going to get out of it than for what he was going to give to Jesus. And I think that's actually true of a lot of us. See, when I first became a Christian, I was a teenager, and I first started following Jesus, and I, to be quite honest, probably became a Christian more based on what I was going to get out of it than what I was going to put into it. In fact, there were really, as I've thought about it, there are three main reasons that I became a Christian and started following Jesus. First, I didn't want to go to hell. And I have been told in my church that if you didn't become a Christian, that's where you were going. And that's pretty good motivation to pick Jesus. So I decided to follow Jesus based on that motivation. Second, I was under the impression that people who went to church and who were religious would always stay out of trouble. And they were like good people. And so I thought, I want that. Like, it's like, I don't want to be one of those teenagers that grows up and gets in trouble all the time. I'd heard all the horror stories. And so I wanted that. And I also, third, I was under the impression that people who became Christians, God like took care of them the rest of their lives. And he made sure that everything was good and they always had enough money and they were always healthy and they never got sick and everything went perfectly the rest of their lives. And that's, of course, the truth, right? And yet, as I think about it, honestly, my motives for becoming a Christian were pretty selfish. Like, I was really more concerned about me and what I was going to get out of it than about Jesus and what I would put into it. And yet, I think even with those kind of motives, Jesus was patient with me, like he's patient with a lot of us. And I think Jesus was patient with Peter. Because for 3 years, Peter followed Jesus. And for 3 years, Peter was, again, this leader. And he was focused on what he was going to get out of this thing. Because he reasoned in his mind, like, if I follow Jesus and he keeps doing this, like, miracle, like, bringing all these fish to us, like, that's a pretty good deal. Like, I can get used to that. So I'll keep following him because of that. Another reason is he looks like he might be the Messiah. And if he is the Messiah, like if he is the promised one, then I'm going to be close to him. And when things go down, like when he becomes the king, in fact, you know, there was like that argument between them. Who's the greatest disciple of all? Like when Jesus becomes king and he brings in his kingdom, who's going to be like the greatest among the disciples? And Peter knew he had a pretty good shot at making it happen because he was the most outspoken disciple. He was the guy who always had the answers. He was the guy who was always leading them. It seemed like he was the one who had it together more than anybody else. And yet it was still like he was mainly living and following Jesus for himself. Because one time, Jesus was teaching and Peter actually piped up and he interrupted Jesus totally off the subject of what Jesus was talking about. And he just stopped in front of all the disciples. He said, hey, Jesus, we've all left everything to follow you. What are we going to get out of this? Like, and those were his literal words. What are we going to get out of this? And if you're Jesus at that point, you know, Jesus was so patient with him. And Jesus knew, like, I'm just going to keep pouring into this guy. I'm just going to keep being patient with this guy. I'm just going to keep helping this guy see that hopefully over time he'll realize that following me is about something a whole lot different than being in this for yourself. And ultimately, it all came to a head one night because Jesus was he gathered all of his disciples around one night, and it was Passover celebration, so they were going to celebrate the Passover together. And he gathered all 12 of them, and he looked at all of them, and he said, one of you is going to betray me tonight. And immediately, Peter pipes up and basically says, who is it? Like, it's not me, because I'm the most committed, and you know it's not going to be me, so we got to find out who it is that's going to betray you, Jesus. And then, a few minutes later, Jesus says, oh, no, wait, it's going to get worse. Let me tell you what's about to happen in the next few hours. And I'm going to read now from the Gospel of Matthew. If you want to turn there, you can, but we'll put the verses up on the screen. But this is what Matthew says as he records this conversation that happens that night in 26, verse 31. Then Jesus told them, this very night you will all fall away on account of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. He's referring to an Old Testament prophecy. But after I've risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. Now, Jesus isn't asking for a response. He's not trying to instill allegiance from them. He's not trying to get a commitment from them. He's just telling them what's about to happen. And look at how Peter replies in the next verse. Peter replied, even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. Now, Jesus has got to be thinking on at this point, Peter, I just said you're all going to fall away. And you just said that you won't. So either I'm wrong or you're wrong. And you've been following me for a few years now, and you should know I'm usually not wrong. And yet Peter, in front of everybody, basically in front of all the other guys, says, look, even if all these other clowns desert you, Jesus, I'm your guy. I will stick with you through thick and thin. I am committed to you. Look at how Jesus responds. Truly, I tell you, Jesus answered, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And again, Jesus isn't looking for response, but look at what Peter says. Peter declared, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And then, being the leader Peter is, it says, all the other disciples said the same. So Peter rallies the troops. He rallies everyone together, and they all pledge their commitment. And Peter's going to lead the charge. He's going to be the one that's most committed, most dedicated, most loyal. And yet, you know what this story tells us? It tells us you can be committed to Jesus and not really be following Jesus. It tells us you can be devoted and loyal to Jesus and not really following Jesus. Tells us you can be leading for Jesus. You can be like the best leader in the world and still not be following Jesus. Because if you're leading, if you're still in the driver's seat, if you're still in charge, then you're not really following. A few minutes later, after Peter's all out, you know, commitment to Jesus, Jesus says, can you come to the garden with me to pray? He says, I'm going to go over here and pray by myself, guys, but if you'll just stay here and stay awake and pray with me and for me. And of course, Peter and they all say, yeah, we'll do it. Jesus goes away, he comes back, and Peter is sound asleep. So Jesus wakes him up, and Peter's like, oh, yeah, sorry. Like, sorry, just nodded off. Actually, I was awake, you know. Don't worry about me, I'll stay awake. Jesus goes away, comes back a second time. Peter's sound asleep. Wakes him up again, goes away, comes back a third time. Peter is sound asleep. A few minutes later, Judas and the authorities show up. Judas betrays Jesus. And the authorities carry him away to a trial. And while Jesus is being tried, and while Jesus is being beaten, all of the disciples scatter. And the only picture we get is of Peter standing in the courtyard late that night. And a little servant girl walks up to him and says, hey, you are following Jesus, right? No, I don't know who you're talking about. Second time, servant girl walks up. You're one of those who is with Jesus, aren't you? No, I don't even know the man. Third time, hey, aren't you one of those Galileans with that strange accent? Didn't we see you with Jesus? Aren't you one of his followers? No, I told you, I don't know who the man is. Three times, Peter falls asleep on Jesus. Three times, Peter denies even knowing who Jesus is. And it's like everything that he's been learning for 3 years, and all of his loyal dedication and commitment to Jesus, in this moment when things get tough, it all goes out the window, and he falls flat on his face. Now, do you know why Peter failed so miserably in this moment? Because he was too busy leading and not following. Because he was too busy being a committed leader and not a surrendered follower. And there is a huge difference between committed leadership and surrendered followership. You see, committed leadership is about what I'm committed to. Surrendered followership is about who I am surrendered to. Committed leadership glories in achievement, what we can accomplish and what we can achieve. Surrendered followership is content with being in the back. Committed leadership is about what I must succeed at. Surrendered followership recognizes I will often fail. Committed leadership, it's ultimately about me and my will and my plans and my desires and my agenda. And surrendered followership says, you know what? I've got all those things, but I'm going to lay them aside. I'm going to surrender them, and I'm willing to follow you, your will, your agenda, wherever you would lead. You know what the word surrender means? Let me give you a definition. It means to give up or abandon, to give over or resign oneself to something, to relinquish control. And as negative as that sounds, because that just has a negative connotation, doesn't it? Like, we don't surrender. We're Americans. We do not surrender. We never give up. We always keep fighting. Yet, that's ultimately where Jesus wants to take all of us if we're going to follow Him. And ultimately, He's going to look at you and me like He looked at Peter. He's going to say, at some point in your life, and it might not happen on day one when you first start following me, I'm a whole lot more gracious and merciful than that, but at some point, you're going to have to get out of the driver's seat. And you're going to have to stop leading and being in charge of your life, and you're going to have to start following. And if you don't, you'll end up like Peter in the garden or in the courtyard, making these all-out commitments and then falling flat on your face. Fortunately for Peter, and fortunately for you and for me, this isn't where his story ends. Because Jesus knew that Peter was going to fail, and Jesus knew that Peter wasn't going to keep his promise. And Jesus was willing to die on the cross for the sake of Peter's failures and my failures and your failures. And then Jesus rose from the grave and defeated all of our failures. And the Bible says that after Jesus rose from the grave, He appeared to His followers a few times in the last couple of weeks. John, we've read the stories in John where it says Jesus appeared to His disciples and Peter was there. And yet absent in both of those appearances is any kind of interchange between Peter and Jesus. We're not really sure if anything was ever said. And so John goes on to tell us about a third encounter that takes place with Jesus. In John chapter 21, starting in verse 1, picking up where we left off last week, this is what it says. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to His disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that was James and John, and two other disciples were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them. And they said, "We'll go with you." And so they went out and got into the boat. But that night, they caught nothing. So stopping there for a second, Peter and the disciples are right back where they had started. And it's almost like Peter didn't even really know what to do with his life at this point. Like he had made, the last time he had been with Jesus, he had made this all-out commitment and he had failed miserably. And he had seen Jesus rise from the dead, but he didn't know what to do with that. He didn't know how to live in light of what had happened at Easter. And so it's almost like the only thing that he knew to do was just to go back and do what he had always done. Almost like he's going back to before he even met Jesus. And so he's right here, back in Galilee, back home, fishing. John goes on in verse 4, he tells us, "Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus." He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. So he said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. It's almost like deja vu again for the disciples. And it's almost like this triggers a memory of exactly what had happened 3 years before. And in light of that, look at what happens next. Then the disciples, or the disciple whom Jesus loved, that was actually John, he said to Peter, "It is the Lord." And as soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and he jumped into the water. And the other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. And when they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Going on, it says, Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." And so Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and he dragged the net ashore. See, Peter was a big guy. He was a strong guy. Almost every other time in Scripture, it talks about multiple people dragging the nets. But Peter's able to do it himself. And so he goes over there, he grabs the net, and he drags it. And John tells us it was full of large fish, 153. Isn't that interesting? Like that number, it's almost like it was burned into John's mind as he remembered this episode. 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So they're sitting there and they're eating breakfast with Jesus. And you can almost sense that it's totally quiet, because they don't know what to say, and they're just not even sure what to even ask. And it's like they all know it's Jesus. Like they know it's Jesus, but none of them wants to say anything about it, and none of them knows what to say. And reading between the lines for a minute, you can almost sense that Peter is sitting there, and he's just quiet. Which is so unlike Peter, because Peter was always the guy who had something to say. Peter was always the one who would, you know, lead the disciples and say, "Here's what we need to talk about, and here's what we need to go do." Peter was always the one engaging and leading. And yet, here he is, quiet. Maybe something's changed. You see, the old Peter would have led out at that moment and would have said something bold. But maybe something has changed in Peter's heart. And maybe Jesus senses it. And so maybe that's why Jesus decides to address him. Look at what Jesus says in the next verse. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you." So Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." I'll stop in there for a second. You've got to imagine that this question wounded Peter's pride a little bit. Because the last time that Jesus had spoken with Peter, Peter had said, "All these other guys might fall away, but I won't. Like, I love you basically more than any of these other guys." And so Jesus looks at him and says, "Peter, do you love me more than anyone else here?" Peter responds back, basically says, "You know what's in my heart? Like, I'm not going to make any kind of commitments like I did last time, but yeah, I love you." Jesus says, "Feed my lambs." Which is interesting what Jesus doesn't say. Jesus doesn't say, "Well, I'm really angry. How could you have made such a silly promise? I can't believe..." No. Jesus looks at him and says, "All right. 3 years ago, Peter, I gave you a mission and I said that you're going to be like a new kind of fisherman and you're going to go out and you're going to start fishing for people. Well, now I'm giving you another mission. You're going to be like a shepherd. And I want you to actually take care of those people and feed those people. To which at this point, Peter's got to be thinking, what? Like, no lecture? No punishment? Like, aren't you angry? Aren't you? That's almost like Jesus in these words is trying to say, you know what, Peter? I forgive you. I'm not here to lecture you. I'm not here to punish you. I'm here to restore you. Now we can move forward. And just when Peter thinks maybe they can move forward, Jesus comes back. And look at what he says next. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. Same question, same answer. Peter's got to be wondering, wait a second, like, did I not answer it right the first time? Jesus continues, next verse, the third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him the third time, do you love me? And the first time I read this story, probably a long time ago, I think the impression I got was that Peter's upset because it's like, oh, Jesus has asked me three times. Like, he must not think I really love him. But I think Peter's actually hurt because he realizes in this moment what Jesus is doing. And he realizes in this moment that Jesus is in the process of giving him a chance to experience forgiveness. Because he remembers back to that night where three times Jesus had found him asleep. And then, even more significantly, three times he had disowned Jesus. And it's almost like this was Jesus' way of meeting Peter where he was and saying, all right, we're going to go through this three times so that you can experience not the full gravity of your failure, but the full gravity of my forgiveness. Look at how Peter responds back. He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. In other words, I'm done making commitments. I'm done leading. I'm ready to start following. And I know it just starts with loving you. And you know I love you, Jesus. In fact, when I saw you from the boat, the first thing I could do, I didn't want to ride in the boat. Like, I wanted to dive in the water and swim and meet you. But I'm not going to make any bold commitments anymore. I'm just going to follow you. And look at how Jesus responds. Jesus said, feed my sheep. And then he says, very truly I tell you, when you were younger and you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. And Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. It's interesting what Jesus says here, because in a sense, it's almost like he's saying, think about your life, Peter. When you were a young guy, like when you were a young buck, you just did what you wanted. You followed your own agenda and you just led your own life. But when you get older, you reach a place where you can't do what you want anymore. You've got to rely on other people and you become fully dependent on other people. You don't just get to go wherever you want to go. And it's almost like that's a picture of the journey of faith, that hopefully you'll reach a point where you're not just in charge of your life anymore, but you are following me wherever I lead you. And then Jesus gives him a snapshot of where he will lead him. Because he says, when you get older, here's what's going to happen. And ultimately it becomes true because Peter does become a leader in the church. And if you read through the entire book of Acts, you see Peter is part of this group of men and women who begin the church and launch the Christian movement, which changes Galilee and changes Jerusalem and changes the Roman Empire and ultimately changes the entire world. And in the midst of all of that, Peter will come to the end of his life and he'll be persecuted for his faith, and he'll ultimately follow in the footsteps of Jesus and give his life for the very faith that he believes in. But Jesus doesn't end on that kind of somber note. He says one more thing to Peter. Then he said to him, "Follow me." In other words, nothing's changed, Peter. 3 years ago, I met you in this very spot, and I said, "I want you to follow me." And today, I'm saying the same thing. I just want you to follow me. But you can't follow as long as you're leading. You've got to surrender yourself. And you've got to surrender your wills and your desires and your worries and your junk and even your failures to me. Because that is the only way to follow. Now, maybe you're here tonight and you would say you've been doing a lot of leading in your own life. Maybe there are parts of your life that you haven't really given over to God. And you said, no, these are things that I think I've got under control. And I think God would look at you and me tonight and say the same thing that he would say to Peter. Look, you've got to follow me. And it's not always going to be easy. Sometimes it's going to be hard. And you know what it ultimately means? It means dying to yourself. It means dying sometimes to your dreams. It means dying to your agenda, to your goals, to your way, to your will. But it's only until you die with me to yourself that you'll be able to experience my resurrection and that you'll be able to experience new life and new meaning and new purpose. But you got to follow. And you got to surrender. So here's the question I want to close with tonight. Is there anything that God would maybe be asking you to surrender to him? Is there a relationship in your life you've been clinging on to? Is there a situation? Is there a conflict? Is there a goal? Is there a dream? Is there something in your life that you've just been holding on dearly to that you have not wanted to give up? That Jesus would just look at you tonight and he'd say, "Would you be willing to just surrender it to me?" And you know what it's going to take? It's going to take trusting me. But if you will die to that thing, I promise you will experience the life that I can give you in that area. And so here's what we're going to do. We're going to close by singing a couple of songs. And we do this often, but the reason we do it is not just to tack a couple of songs on the end of the service. The reason we do it is because it's a way of tangibly responding to what God is challenging us to do. It's a way of literally singing words and declaring in a way when we sing these words that, "God, I want to take this thing. Or maybe I just want to take my entire life. I've never really done it, but I want to take my life and surrender it to you." And so I pray that God would challenge you and move you to do that as we do that tonight. Let me close this in a word of prayer. Lord God, the idea of following you is a good idea. We all like it, and yet so many of us know what it's like to kind of just hold on to our lives and want to just add you to our lives. And thank you for your patience and grace with us when we do that. Thank you for your patience and grace with us when we are selfish, and we confess, and I confess how selfish I often am. And yet, God, we know that you want to move beyond that, and you want to move in our hearts and our lives beyond that. So I just pray right now for every single person in this room, whatever you've brought to our minds and our hearts that maybe we're clinging to, that you challenge us to surrender that to you. And ultimately, God, we know The only way we can do that is when we come face to face with your love for us. When we come face to face with your unconditional love, grace, forgiveness. You sent your Son for each one of us. That's the only place we can put our trust in tonight. Help each one of us.